welcome this morning once again. It's great to have you here, especially if you're a visitor. And we're going through a series of Luke's parables in Luke's Gospel, which is kind of Luke's story of Jesus' life. So he records some of the things that happened to Jesus and some of the things Jesus said. If you do have a Bible, it's worth keeping it open at Luke 15. Now, I wonder if you've ever been in the situation where someone's annoyed with you and you have no idea why. If you're in a relationship, maybe a friendship or a marriage, it often happens, doesn't it? Where you know there's something going on with the other person. You know they're not quite happy with you, but you're not exactly sure why. And you're wondering why you're being punished for something you don't even know what it is. And many of us probably feel that way about God. If you're not a Christian this morning, or if you're not sure where you're at, you might have heard a Christian friend say something like, you're separated from God, you've sinned, there's some sort of break between your relationship with God, and you're thinking, well, how have I managed to offend God? I'm not a terrible person. In fact, I've hardly ever spoken to him or thought about him my whole life. How can I have offended him? What's his problem with me? Or maybe you're a Christian. And you think, I come to church every Sunday, I serve on various rotas, I pray and read the Bible regularly, yet sometimes it seems that God's not answering my prayer, that we don't seem to have this close relationship that everyone else talks about. And so many of us feel that God is some kind of stroppy person, someone who is annoyed with us and we just don't know why. But what Jesus is telling us in this passage is why our relationship with God is broken. And in a way, he tells us there's two distinct ways to run from God. There's rebellion, which he talks about in the story of the younger son. And then there's religion, which he talks about in the story of the older son. And these two things can be reasons why our relationship with God may be broken. So we're going to look at the first one, the story of the younger son, which is a story of rebellion. And if we have a look at verse 12, we can see the essence of why they had this great fallout. Why the father and the son, the father representing God, and the younger son representing people coming to God. Why there was this breakdown. Verse 12 says this. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. I don't know whether you've ever been fortunate enough, although it's a sad fortunate, that when somebody passes away, they give you some money or things like that. You know, it's nice to have a gift to remember someone by. I know when my grandma died, she gave me some of my great-grandfather's World War I medals, and that was really a cool thing to have, not just to remember him, but when I was doing a World War I project, me and my nana discussed these things, and so it was a cool thing to remember by. But I would never think that when my nana was still alive, to demand a gift off her. I'd never think to demand her to give me some of her money right now. But that's exactly what this boy does. He basically says to his father, I can't wait for you to be dead to get the land. I want you to give me that land now. So he's taking the gift, he's taking the thing he wants from the father, but he's rejecting the person who owns it. Now remember that the father's meant to be a picture of God. And so it's the same with many of us. God gives us many great gifts. I bet if we all sat down, Americans do this thing at Thanksgiving, don't they, where they write down all the things they're thankful for. And if we sat down and wrote down all the things we're thankful for, even if we're not Christians, we could think of a lot. We've got family, we've got friends, we've maybe got a job that we enjoy, we've maybe got a hobby that we enjoy doing. God gives us lots of gifts. But often we take those gifts and we reject him. We treat him like he's unimportant. We reject him as if he's not even there. And so for some of you this morning, you might come thinking, well, how can I have offended God if I've never done anything? But the fact is, that's kind of the point. I can think of some couples I've known that have had relationship difficulties, and I think of one in particular, where the guy was kind of absent. He maybe worked long hours at work. When he came home, he was kind of obsessed with like online role-playing games because he's a bit of a geek. And so he just hardly ever spent any time with his wife.
And he said, well, how can I have offended her? I've hardly said two words to her all week. Well, that's kind of the point, mate. That's the reason why your relationship is breaking down. And that's the problem between many of us and God. We take his stuff, yeah, that's fine. But we reject him. It's like if a man proposes to a woman and she says, oh, this is a lovely ring, this is great, I'll definitely take this, get a lot of use out of it. And he says, well, that's great, but are you going to marry me or not? No, not that into you, but I will take the ring, thank you very much, that'll be great. And that's the way many of us approach God. We like the stuff that he's provided for us, but reject him himself. So that's the reason for the fallout. But what's the result of that fallout? You may think, well, it's all well and good to say, you know, I should pursue relationship with God. But sometimes you've got to do what's right for you, don't you? You know, when you reach 18 or something and you go away from home, your mum and your dad are crying, they're like, oh, don't go, don't go. You've kind of got to go out on your own, don't you? You've got to, you know, make your own life. And yet, what Jesus is saying here is that there is a result to leaving God. There is a problem for us. Let's have a look at what happens in verse 13 to 16. It says this, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. Now that is kind of what the average student tends to do, isn't it? They go away to uni, they throw off all the rules that their parents have, they go out, you know, every night and all these kind of things. And this guy had a lot of money as well. So he was living the millionaire lifestyle in the fancy clubs. All the women would have liked him, you know. He'd be the talk of the town. It all looked great. But it doesn't stop there. Verse 14 says this. After he spent everything, there was a severe famine in the country. And he began to be in need. He was hungry. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. Now, if you have any Muslim friends, you would know that Muslims don't eat pigs. It would be an awful thing for them to go and work with pigs. Well, it was the same with Jews. To go and feed the pigs would be the vilest job possible. He would have to reject his religion. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. You see, when we go away from God, at first, the party's on. We can do what we like. It seems great. It seems amazing. But over time, we reach that pigsty moment. Maybe it's the moment when a relationship breaks down, a relationship that you put a lot of emphasis on. You thought this was going to be the thing that made you happy, and yet it fell apart. Maybe it's job problems. Maybe you went to your job, you thought, again, this was going to be the great job, the one that would give you meaning to your life. And yet actually it brings you a lot of stress, it brings you a lot of hurt. You don't seem to be making the progress you thought you'd be making. Or maybe it's what our culture tends to call a midlife crisis. It doesn't have to be in the middle of your life, but there's that point where you think, what am I doing? Have I wasted the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years? Many of us will have that pigsty moment. And if it hasn't happened to you, then it's probably coming. What Jesus says is if we reject God, then we will end up in a place where our life doesn't have meaning, where we realise that it would have been better with him in the first place. So that's the result of rejecting God. We always end in the pigsty. So what's the solution to this problem? Well, let's have a look at verse 18. This is what the younger brother thinks he's going to do, and this is what most of us by default would probably think. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned, that's done wrong, against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So this son doesn't expect to go back and be treated like a son. He realises he's gone too far for that. No, his father is not going to accept him in that way. But maybe he can be a hired servant. Maybe he can work off that debt. You can imagine going along with his Excel spreadsheet and showing that after, you know, 5 years he'll have paid off 10% of his debt and then so on and so forth. This is the plan. This is how I'm going to earn my way back to you, Father. And that's how many of us would go about our relationship with God. In fact, there's a Buddhist version of this story, not entirely the same, but quite similar. And in that story,
what the brother does is exactly this plan. He goes back, and the father says to him, well, I'm not going to quite accept you as a son yet. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to show your work. Day after day, I want you to slave away like one of my hired men, like one of my slaves. And one day, he finally does enough to be accepted back. But that isn't what happens in this story. No, the father gives something even greater. If you notice in verse 21, as he comes along, oh, it's not even verse 21, sorry, it's verse 20. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, before he'd given his speech about how he was going to make his way back, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. Before this son had set out his plan to make things right, the father had already accepted him. And if you think about this, why did the father see him whilst he was a long way off? The only reason could have been if he was looking, if he was waiting. It's not that the son had to earn his way. In fact, the son then goes through his, you know, 5-point plan of how he's going to sort things out. And the father just ignores him. He says, the son, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But straight after, the father gives him loads of stuff that symbolise his acceptance as a son. He's given a robe, he's given a ring, he's given sandals for his feet. A celebration party will happen. And it ends with him saying this, for this son of mine was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. He is restored to sonship. You see, it's not him that has to pay the price. It's not him that has to sort everything out. No, it's the father. The father pays the price, not the son. And it's the same with us too. It is God who pays the price, not us. The father in this story paid in two ways. He paid in shame. In our culture, seeing a bloke running down the street probably won't cause us too much of a shock. But in the Middle East, the idea of a man hitching up his robe and running along and hugging and kissing, especially a son that had so dishonoured him, well, that would be abhorrent. He would be shamed in his society. And yet the father takes that shame to have his son come back. He also pays a great cost. You know, robes and fattened calves and all these things were very expensive in that culture. But the father is willing to pay the price to have his son come back. And that is exactly what happened in our relationship with God. You see, God became a man. He lived a life in a stable and then a life where he was rejected by many. On the cross, he paid the price, the debt that we owed, so that we could come back to him. You see, often people think that the idea of an offended God puts them off. Why is God in a strop? Why do I have to make amends? But that's not the case. God is not in a strop. He has done everything to have you back, and he waits at the gates, like the father in this story, to see you come home. All you have to do is turn back. All you have to do is say that the way that you were going, the life you lived was wrong, and turn back to him. And your relationship can be restored. Now, if you're not a Christian this morning, you're probably thinking, this is exactly what I expected when I came to church. Christians are the good people, and non-Christians are the bad people. We're separated from God, and yet the Christians, oh, they're the holy people who get to be with God. They've never upset him. But the shocking part of this story is, it's not just rebellion that separates us from God. Religion can lead us away from God too. That's shown in the story of the older brother. And the reason why I asked Lois to read the first two verses of this chapter is to tell us what was happening at the time of this story. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear him. Jesus is hanging out with a load of people who are younger brothers. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, the pastors, the small group leaders, the really committed people, they muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. The younger brother in the story is representing the tax collectors, the sinners. But the Pharisees and the scribes are represented by the older brother. And if you notice, the older brother has a fallout with the father too. Let's have a look in verse 29 to 30 to see his explanation of why he's so annoyed at his father. But he answered his father, look, All these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to sell so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. Now the problem with his son is not that he's been disobedient. It's not that he's run away. The brother says that he's never disobeyed the father's orders. And the father never says that he's wrong to say that. He happily admits that, okay, he has done his bit. The older son obeys. He's a religious man. He's a godly man. If we saw this person at church, he'd be the one who puts the chairs away when everyone else is chatting. He'd be helping the kids work right now. He'd maybe be up the front doing the sermon right now. This is a religious man. And yet his relationship is still broken. Why? Well, clearly the fattened calf's a big deal. Now, if most of us sitting here reading it, you know, they're going, oh no, the fattened calf, the fattened calf. Oh my goodness, the fattened calf's been slayed. And we're thinking, what's the deal with a really fat cow? But what the thing was that in those days, people didn't tend to eat meat that much. But the fattened cow was even more than that. If you were going to have a big celebration, probably a marriage, you would keep feeding this cow, feeding it until it got mighty fat. And then you could kill it and the whole village, which would probably only be about 40 people, could come for a big celebration and gorge themselves for days on this massive barbecue. So the fattened calf is a big deal. It's kind of like marriage in our culture is a big deal, isn't it? We save lots of money, we spend lots of money on the perfect wedding. The amount of money that went into a marriage is the equivalent of the fattened calf. And now this brother is annoyed because the younger brother got the fattened calf. And he believes that he earned it. He's been the one slaving away in the fields. Notice he says slaving, not serving you as a loving son, but slaving. It was a pain, it was a nuisance. I didn't want to help you, I didn't want to serve you, but I had to do it. I slaved away. And I was hoping that someday I might get that fattened calf, or at least a young goat. But no, you give it to that guy who ran off and wasted it on prostitutes. You see, whilst the younger brother may have rejected the giver to get the gift, this older brother thought he could earn the gift. But deep down, he was still rejecting the giver just as much. And you know, many people are religious, not to get God, but to get God's stuff. When I was a primary school teacher, sometimes the kids that would be doing the worst things on the playground would be the kids who in class were the absolute angels and darlings of everyone's lives. Sometimes the best way to reject someone is to actually do what they say. So these people, like I said, they are rejecting God deep down, but on the surface they're doing what he wants because they want his stuff. So for example, we might do this. We might have our morning prayer time with God, in the hope that that means we'll get a good day at work when we've had a bad one for the rest of the week. We go to church faithfully, but we're kind of hoping that we'll get that little spiritual buzz to keep us going through the week. We might do the right thing, but in the hope that our life will be made easier as a result. We treat God like a cosmic vending machine. If we put in our pounds worth of good works, then we'll get the Snickers bar out at the bottom. But that's not how it works. What if the cosmic vending machine fails? It's not a way to develop a relationship. If there was a husband and a wife who had a relationship like that, a give and take, almost a business relationship, we think it was very strange. That's how many of us relate to God. What's so bad? What's the result of that? Well, he grows in bitterness, doesn't he? First of all, he rejects his brother. He says, I'm not going to have you back into our home. I'm not going to accept you as I should, as your older brother. But then it culminates in verse 28. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. He refused to go into the party. Now, in the other parables that we read last week, the parties were in heaven. As this party represents heaven, it represents relationship with God. This person, this older brother, has rejected God because of his attitude to God, because he wants his gifts. And it was a picture of the Pharisees. If you know your Bible well, you will know that these Pharisees, these religious people, were the ones who rejected Jesus. Their closeness to God had actually caused them to go further away. People who serve God for his stuff often struggle to forgive others. And if they struggle to forgive others, well, they're never going to be able to come to the God of forgiveness. So what's the solution for older brothers? Maybe you are an older brother. I was an older brother. All my life, I served God. I did the right thing. I was the good boy. And yet, deep down, I didn't really care about who God was. So what's the response for people like that? Well, verse 28 tells us something more. The last sentence, so his father went out and pleaded with him. Notice it's the father who pleads, not the son. It's not the son saying, I'm sorry, Dad, please let me come back. And he says, no, this is one time too many. You are not accepted into my kingdom. No, it's the other way around. The father pleads, and the son is the one who rejects. Now, that's crazy when you think about the fact that this older brother was meant to be the Pharisees. The Pharisees criticized Jesus all his life. Jesus knew, because he knew everything, that they would be the ones who got him killed. They would be the ones that when he was hung on the cross, riled up the crowd to shout out insults at him. The Pharisees were probably Jesus' worst enemies. And yet he here is telling them this story face to face, begging them like the Father, come back in. Come in and celebrate with these lost ones who have come home. In our world today, probably the biggest sin that you can ever commit is hypocrisy. We can forgive people who've done terrible sins if they ask for forgiveness. But someone who looks down on others, someone who's self-righteous, is often the person that we think is the lowest of all. And in many ways, perhaps we're right. But the Father never holds a grudge. Whether it's a religious person who's gone away from him, or whether it's a rebellious person who's gone away from him, he is always willing to go out and plead with us to come back. So I want to return to that question we had at the beginning. What have we done to offend God? Well, maybe you are a person who's been rebellious. Maybe you're living a life without any reference to God at all. Maybe you're taking from him all of his good things but leaving him at home. Well, this passage says you will end up in the pigsty. You will end up leading a life without God that causes you pain and hurt and rejection. Or maybe it's religion that's keeping you from God. Maybe you keep the commands. You're the strongwort at church. Everyone comes to you when they need you for something. And yet, you're doing that with the expectation that God will give you what you want. Maybe you struggle to forgive people who haven't been as good as you. Maybe you find it difficult to get involved in evangelism and reaching out to people who don't know God because, quite frankly, you feel they kind of deserve it. Or you feel that you just don't get on with that kind of person. They're a different kind of person to you. But if you live this way, if you let religion drive you from God, then ultimately you will not be with him at all. All of us, whether we're the religious guys or whether we're the rebellious guys, all of us deserve to be rejected by God. But that's not the chief message of Christianity. The chief message of Christianity is good news. The Father is not in a strop. He is willing to have us back. In fact, he paid the greatest price possible, giving his son so that we might return. He became a man and died on a cross so that we could come in. Our debt is paid. So whether you're an older brother or a younger brother, why don't you return to him today? The Father is looking and waiting at the gate. The question is, are you coming home?